You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Now available to you. The Marriage Matrix can save you expense, personal embarrassment, and maybe even save your marriage.
I'm America's behavior expert, Scott Farrell. If you really want a shot at saving your marriage, get the Marriage Matrix today, and together, let's do this.
Call now, 844-HELP-US-0. That's 844-HELP-US-0. Or visit ismymarriageworthit.com.
Records show an escaped Ohio prisoner recently found in Florida was caught decades ago in West Virginia, but had built such a good life with his stolen freedom that the governor concluded he'd been rehabilitated as a fugitive. USA's Russ Jones has more.
Frank Freshwaters disappeared from a prison camp near Sandusky in 1959 while serving time for manslaughter. In 1975, police found the Akron man hiding under a sink at a home in St. Albans, West Virginia. They became suspicious because they were there on a routine warrant to follow up on a complaint by his ex-wife, not to capture the fugitive he turned out to be. Copies of subsequent correspondence show then-Governor Arch Moore Jr. of West Virginia refused to extradite Freshwaters, saying he'd been a flawless citizen there. I'm Russ Jones.
FIFA's 65th Congress is underway as the International Soccer Organization gathers to vote on a president. The U.S. says it will not offer support to incumbent Sepp Blatter. He's been under fire since 14 current and former FIFA executives were indicted on a number of corruption charges by the Department of Justice earlier this week. The U.S. will instead vote for Jordan's Prince Ali bin Al Hussein. The public will get its first view from the new observatory at One World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan today. Tickets are $32 for adults to head to the 102nd floor. On a clear day, you can see about 50 miles away from that spot. Make sure to follow us online at usaheadlinenews.com for more special interest stories, news, and headlines. I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
It's 9:05. It's time for Hunterdon Chamber Radio weather. We're at 70 degrees right now. Clear skies and no precipitation today. Going to get plenty of rain later this week. Later next week, though. Today is going to be a little cooler than yesterday. Not much. It's Friday the 29th, and it's going to be a high near 85. A good deal of sunshine. Winds light and variable. Partly cloudy skies tonight, a low of 60, wind southeast of 5 to 10 miles an hour. And for tomorrow, the block party in town of Clinton gets perfect weather, 87 degrees, intervals of clouds and sunshine, and winds south of 10 to 15 miles an hour. Well, wait a minute, we have a change in the Saturday night forecast. Colleen, you're going to be very happy about this. I hope it stays. Partly cloudy and a low of 64, no precipitation in the forecast. Wow, We held out and it did well. Scattered thunderstorms on Sunday morning, though, especially in the afternoon. A high of 81, chance of rain 60%. That's awesome. Cloudy with showers on Monday, a high near 60, chance of rain 60%. Showers in the morning on Tuesday, cloudy in the afternoon 69, chance of rain 60%. And Wednesday, intervals of clouds and sunshine and a high of 73. It is 73 in Lebanon, 76 in Stockton, 69 in Raritan, 66 in Oh, I guess it's 76 over in Phillipsburg and 72 over in the town of Clinton with their block party tomorrow. Good morning, Hunterdon. Wow, that weather is awesome. That's Hunterdon Chamber Radio weather. Friday, take the A train, get on out of town. Actually, come back into town. If you're in the A train, you're in New York, and you need to take the Raritan Vale line over here. And we'll take care of you for the weekend. Great time to be in the Hunterdon County area to enjoy the weather and the countryside in Hunterdon County. It is 8 after 9. Good friend Mike gave us the movies. Maybe you're going to hold off to those for next week when we have our rainy weather. Still get traffic, find out what's going on with our Hunterdon County roads, not our railroads. And the good news is I have nothing right now. Everything's quiet, which is good because yesterday we had more than our share. So drive safe, sound, be smart about what you're doing. And get off my traffic report. HERTTMA.com can give you your report, register with them, follow them on Twitter, and you'll have the
I'm Dave Lang with Insight Financial Services and a proud member of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Even in this difficult economy, our family of companies, including Insight Financial, Premier College Funding, and the Insight Tax and Accounting Group, have grown and prospered. I believe that our participation in all of the opportunities that the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce offers to its members strongly contributes to our success.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to hold its second annual Hunterdon County Community Day on Saturday, June 13th from 12:30 to 6:30 at the Hunterdon County Fairgrounds in Ringo's. We thank our presenting sponsor, Hunterdon Healthcare, and the Hunterdon County Freeholders. Come get involved, be a vendor, an exhibitor, if you're a business or an organization. Come get before thousands of folks on this great day. Contact the Chamber at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at hunterdonchamber.org. Once again, join us on Hunterdon County Community Day, Saturday, June 13th. Get involved with your community today.
Good afternoon on this beautiful, unbelievably warm, after all the cool weather we've had, beautiful, one of the last days, of course, in May, unfortunately. Where did this month go? Just flew by. So, the program, It's the Law, but let me tell you a little bit about the weather first. Tonight is going to be partly cloudy. If you haven't been outside today, you're going to be really surprised. It's a gorgeous day, 86 degrees, probably a little too warm for some people. But tonight will be partly cloudy. Tomorrow, unfortunately, we have about a 30% chance of scattered thunderstorms. So let's hope that doesn't happen. Unfortunately, on Sunday, thunderstorms are likely. It's a 60% chance. I know we need the rain, but it's just unfortunate that we're not going to have at least one really nice day of the weekend. Although, if you're planning anything, I would certainly plan it tomorrow, and especially tomorrow morning. Because tomorrow should be partly sunny, the scattered showers probably after 11 a.m. And then, of course, as I said, Sunday there's a 60% chance of thunderstorms, so they're really likely. High of about 77 degrees on Sunday.
Sunday night, again, 60% chance of showers. And into Monday, 60% chance of showers, and they're likely on Monday. And actually, you know, Monday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, we're going to be getting some of the rain that we've needed. So what does that mean? Well, unfortunately, not great weather for the next few days, but the needed rain. So I'm Pat Smits, and the program It's the Law. This afternoon, I'm going to be talking about some of the legal issues in the news, but I want to remind my listeners that in 2 weeks, I guess that's 2 weeks, on the 12th of June, Friday, June 12th, I'm going to have a guest. Kevin Kilcommons is going to be in, and he's going to be talking about franchises. So if you know of anyone who's interested in possibly buying a franchise, wants to know more about franchises, be sure to tune in on the 12th. Kevin is an attorney here in Hunterdon County, and he has the expertise in this area of the law. Those of you who know me know that although I don't limit this program to family law, that's my area. And I think it's very important for people to understand that when you're seeking an attorney, make sure you get the attorney who, you know, really specializes or knows a lot about that area, because not everyone really can handle every type of case. Believe me, I get a lot of calls and I refer people on to other attorneys. But in any event, what's happening in the news? It's interesting. One of the headlines, at least in legal news, is that a driver's marijuana usage was not able to be used in a case, in a lawsuit. And that's the federal judge, actually, in Newark, ruled that in a suit claiming a tire defect caused a crash that left the plaintiff paralyzed, and this was against Cooper Tire and Rubber Company, they were not allowed to introduce evidence that the driver smoked marijuana the night before he had the accident. So the reason for that would be that the marijuana use could prejudice the jury, and in this particular case, the judge found that it had nothing to do with the defective tires. And so that would be the reason. Once in a while, you'll hear these rather dramatic or unusual or surprising statements about certain lawsuits, and you really need to look into why, what the circumstances were, and in this case, obviously, the judge determined that the plaintiff's usage of marijuana the night before had nothing to do with the accident, because it was caused by a tire defect, or that's what they were trying to prove. They were trying to prove it was caused by a tire defect, and introducing evidence with respect to marijuana use could lead the jury to the wrong conclusion for the wrong reasons. I mean, the jury certainly could find that the tire was not defective, but what the judge was concerned about is that they would find the tire was not defective, but really what they were finding is somehow they wanted to punish or not hold for this plaintiff who smoked marijuana. So that would, you know, that would certainly be a case to look at, and it certainly doesn't mean that if there is drug usage that has any impact on the case that it's going to be excluded from evidence, because that will not happen. Well, what else? There is a New Jersey lawmakers are now moving to overturn a published appellate division ruling that said the state's False Claims Act cannot be used to sue over conduct that occurred before the law. In other words, ordinarily when laws are passed, they're not retroactive. They're prospective, meaning that, especially, of course, criminal laws really could not be made retroactive, because you have to be able to know whether or not you're committing a crime. But other laws generally are prospective. Now, there's one law, of course, that I recall in family law that was a real issue, and that is in 1971, the Divorce Reform Act was enacted. And that was the first time that equitable distribution was permitted. In other words, equitable distribution in divorce cases means that the judge can award either spouse assets or a portion of assets, even if they're titled in the other person's name. So, for example, if parties purchase a home during the marriage, and let's say the husband's in business and they want to protect the asset perhaps against claims from his creditors, and they title the house in the wife's name, subsequently the parties are divorced. That does not mean that the wife gets 100% of the house, because that house is still subject to equitable distribution. It doesn't make any difference how title is acquired. Now, I shouldn't say it doesn't make any difference, but in that circumstance, let's assume marital funds were used and the house was purchased with marital funds. So it doesn't make any difference that the title was taken in the wife's name. Why? Why does that now come up when I'm talking about retroactivity? Well, when the law was enacted in 1971 about equitable distribution, that was one of the questions. In other words, let's assume that somebody was divorced in 1972 and they had acquired property during the marriage. Let's say it was a 10-year marriage, and during that 10-year marriage, they acquired a home or any other asset in the title of one spouse. When they enacted the law, was it going to be retroactive? Meaning, was all assets acquired during that particular marriage, even though the marriage took place prior to the enactment of the equitable distribution statute, were all assets going to be subject to equitable distribution, or were only those assets acquired after 1971 going to be subject to equitable distribution? And of course, the courts the early cases that went up to the Supreme Court, they determined not only was the statute constitutional, but all assets acquired during the marriage would be subject to equitable distribution. And in fact, there was some change in the law after that, because then the legislature went back and said, wait a minute, we don't want during the marriage to mean that if someone gets an inheritance or a gift from a third party, we didn't mean to say that that should be subject to equitable distribution. So they did actually change the law, the statute, to make sure that those were excluded. So in any event, it is unusual to have a retroactive, law. But now the lawmakers, because the appellate division, or in the case I was talking about, the Supreme Court, in this case, of course, it was the appellate division that ruled that the appellate division ruled that the state's False Claims Act cannot be used to sue over conduct that occurred before the lawsuit. So now the legislature is taking another look, and of course they can, in fact, in most cases, some cases they wouldn't be able to enact retroactive legislation, but in this case they're going to enact the law and say that in fact it is retroactive, and it's going to be any case whenever it was whenever the case occurred. Now, some people have heard about the Tracy Morgan suit. He had sued Walmart stores, and it was over a New Jersey turnpike crash, and that was one of the Walmart trucks slammed into a van, and Tracy Morgan is a comedian, and it slammed into the van carrying that he was in. And so the question everybody would be asking is, well, what did it settle? How did it settle? What was the amount of the settlement? Well, all I can say is that it was a confidential settlement. And that's often what happens in these cases. The settlement, I'm sure that in this case it was Walmart stores, they wanted to keep the settlement confidential, and they required a confidentiality agreement in order to settle the case. And that is, in fact, done often. I mean, very often, probably more often than it should. Now, there was another case. Now, this was not published, but there was a case insurance law, and the issue was whether the defendants, and the defendants were an insurance company, whether they should receive a $30,000 aggregate credit against the $35,000 per accident underinsured motorist coverage limit. And so that would then leave only $5,000 available to satisfy all of the plaintiff's claims, or whether the credit is computed by separately deducting the amount of liability insurance proceeds received by each plaintiff from the $35,000 uninsured motorist per accident limitation. I know talking about this over the radio probably is rather confusing. One method, of course, would leave the plaintiffs each with $20,000 in available underinsured motorist coverage. Now, although that calculation would make the aggregate recovery $40,000, the plaintiffs conceded that their aggregate recovery was capped at $35,000. So what the law division judge did is he applied a single individual credit of $15,000 against the $35,000 per accident policy limit. And then the defendants, insurance companies, didn't like that, and they sought reconsideration. Now, of course, by statute, that's what defines so much, and so much is done by statute. And the courts just have to go by this. If there's a statute, that's the way the courts have to deal with it. They have to interpret the statute. So in this case, the appellate division concluded that the statute, which is NJSA 17:28-1.1 paren e n paren paren 1 n paren, that defines underinsured motorist coverage. And what they said, the appellate division said, that statute and the case law which has interpreted the statute require the result reached by the judge, meaning the trial judge. And under the statute, when, as in this case, there are multiple claimants who have exhausted the tortfeasor's liability insurance and the uninsured motorist coverage is available through a single limit policy, then the amount of the underinsured coverage available to an injured person is not reduced by the portion of the tortfeasor's liability insurance that was used to pay the claims of another injured person. I know, a little bit complicated, which is why in cases like that, people absolutely need to see an attorney to see what, in fact, if they have claims, and of course in this case, obviously, the claims are much higher than the insurance. So the, that is a concern. And in fact, anyone who has any assets at all should take a look at their insurance policy and make sure it has you have adequate coverage, because there are real problems if you don't. Also, make sure that you have coverage that covers the type of liability. You have to check your fire coverage. You have to check your flood. You have to check, in fact, if you don't have flood damage, you have to really look at that coverage to see whether or not you're being very foolish to not have the flood coverage. And take a look. And if, most of these policies are, convoluted, difficult to read, so make sure you have an insurance agent who really can explain to you exactly what your coverage is. The leaders of the Democratic-controlled legislature on April 20th filed an amicus brief. And an amicus brief, it means it's a friendly brief. Our New Jersey Supreme Court allows different groups to file amicus briefs if there are issues that are significant. And in this case, the legislature filed an amicus brief with the state Supreme Court asking it to affirm a trial judge's order mandating that Republican Governor Chris Christie work with lawmakers to restore the $1.57 billion in pension fund payments that Governor Christie diverted to balance the state's 2015 fiscal year budget. Now, of course, people are going to say, oh, well, this is just politics as usual. But I think all of us, and certainly anyone who have children or grandchildren who plan on living in New Jersey in the future, really have to be concerned about what is happening to those, you know, when the pension is not paid, when the pension is not funded, when this fund is not done. You know, the governors, you know, should not be diverting these monies to balance the state budget. Now, of course, it looks good if the governor can say, well, I balanced the budget. Look, at New Jersey has a balanced budget for the 2015 fiscal year. But in fact, it doesn't have a balanced budget. You know, if in fact they had to divert $1.57 billion in order to balance it, it means that the budget was not balanced. It was in a deficit of $1.57 billion, if that's the number. And, you know, it's really of concern because these payments, you know, the piper's going to have to be paid at some time. And, you know, politics as usual should not happen. People honestly should be outraged about this. And, you know, maybe I'm the only person. It certainly doesn't hit our pocketbooks right now, but it's certainly going to. So anyone who thinks that the New Jersey 2015 fiscal year budget was balanced, you're wrong. It's simply wrong. You can't steal from one thing to put it in something else and say then the something else is fine, it's balanced, when you don't look at what's happened in the other, the pension fund. And I'm not saying that there should not be some pension fund reforms. One of the concerns, of course, is some people in New Jersey seem to get multiple pensions from the state. And I think some of that needs to be looked at. But let's remember there are many, many dedicated state workers, certainly the workers in the courthouse. I mean, I'm amazed at how hard almost every one of these people that I've ever met. They work very, very hard, very diligent. You know, the family part, support staff here in Hunterdon County is fabulous. But remember, they're part of these pensions, and they are relying on getting the pensions that they've worked all these years to get. And, you know, they're paying in, they're paying more medical insurance now. Many people in the past went to work for the state because of the benefits, because of the pension benefits, because of the medical benefits. And we need these people because, frankly, the court system is so bogged down now that if we lose any more of them, and they are not replacing workers. So it's not like this is, you know, an easy job, because all of the workers I know in the court system, at least, because that is what I know, you know, they're doing so much more work than they had to do just a few years ago. And I'm not saying that's not happening in private industry, because I think the same thing is happening. But enough is enough. Let's stop stealing from the pension. Now, the there's a case, Cruz versus Panasonic, and Panasonic apparently is planning to take its efforts to get a judge thrown off a discrimination case to the New Jersey Supreme Court. The judge in that case, Christine Farrington in Essex County Superior Court, refused to disqualify herself in the case, and the case is Cruz versus Panasonic. And this, she refused to recuse herself in the face of Panasonic's contention that she is biased against the company, or that at the very least a reasonably informed person would have doubts about her impartiality. Now, frankly, we don't know what's going on, And I'm not saying that the judge is or is not biased. It's certainly usually a fairly high standard because it's not unusual for either one party or the other to want to get a judge recused, especially if they've had decisions that have gone against them. So that the judges have to carefully weigh these cases because otherwise every litigant who is unhappy would be filing that type of a motion. So there are times, of course, where it does make sense for a judge if there is bias. And, of course, that's difficult often for a judge to determine whether he or she is biased. But these cases, you know, generally it doesn't happen. I mean, I have to tell you, I think in New Jersey, we have been so lucky with our judicial system. All you have to do is go down near Pennsylvania anywhere and listen to their radio stations, at least in this last few weeks, where, you know, judges are on television, you know, asking for campaign contributions because they're elected in Pennsylvania and in most other states. And frankly, who do you think goes to their fundraisers? It's attorneys. And so talk about possible bias. And I'm not saying those judges are, but I think we have a much better system where we have appointed judges. And once the judges have tenure, that's only after 7 years, but once they have tenure, they are able to stay on the bench, barring other circumstances, but stay on the bench until they reach the age of 70. But that's one of the things that'll see if Panasonic really follows through. And if it goes up to the Supreme Court, of course, then there should be an opinion. And that would be a very interesting opinion as to how the Supreme Court weighs and what weighs the evidence and what criteria they set down. Because they usually do, they take these cases only, meaning the Supreme Court takes most cases. There are some exceptions, but in general, they take cases and pick and choose the cases they take. Now, there's a whistleblower suit in federal court, and these whistleblower suits, if you ever want to read something interesting, some people obviously wouldn't think they're interesting, but they can be very interesting. And the laws are supposed to be enacted to protect a whistleblower from, you know, getting fired, etc. So actually, let me play a news brief and come back, and we'll talk about the most recent issue that came up with respect to whistleblower suits.
USA Headline News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Officials are closely monitoring the levels of three rivers in central and north Texas and Houston after flooding this week left at least 20 people dead. Floodwaters have been receding, but officials continue to monitor the Blanco, San Jacinto, and Brazos rivers. And more rain is in the forecast today.
There'll be a little bit of a respite during the day today, but then another round of storms will likely form over parts of the West Texas area during the evening and once again progress eastward across parts of central and north Texas early Saturday.
Flooding in Dallas caused problems at a Grand Prairie apartment building overnight, according to Alidia Garcia, who spoke to KDFW.
We had our bottom resident, since we couldn't go in the front, they would have to come out the back.
The water pressure was cracking.
And it broke our downstairs neighbor's windows, so all their windows are broken.
And hundreds of Dallas motorists are still stranded on roadways. This is USA Headline News.
Attention! Do you have federal student loans? Are you having difficulty making your standard payments? Are you afraid of having your wages and tax returns garnished? Let us help you today. Student Federal Loan Services can help consolidate your student loans into one affordable monthly payment and cut your payments right away. federal student loan relief to qualified applicants no matter how much you owe. Call the Established Student Aid toll-free assistance line right now at 800-669-0290. Find out if you qualify for any of the government's income-based repayment programs and cut your monthly payments. You may even qualify for programs that can get you a monthly payment of $0. Thousands of people just like you have found relief from their federal student loans. Our trained counselors are waiting, so call today, 800-669-0290. Again, 800-669-0290.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Forgot to tell you who the news was brought to you by, so I'll play that right now, and then I'll be back with It's the Law.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
In America, we believe in a future that is better than today. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has been working hard for their clients' futures, never taking a bailout, helping generations achieve dreams, buy homes, put their kids through college, retire how they want to. Today, Patton, Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you feel more confident about your financial future. Put the strength of a global financial leader to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your dreams and goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services, Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
Well, we're back. I'm Pat Smits. The program is The Law. Just bringing you up to date on some of the legal news and legal issues that are in the news. So that one of the things that people may have been hearing is that cyber attacks are targeting Rutgers University and Penn State University. And so, of course, that's brought the issue of cybersecurity close to home. But it also served to reestablish that higher education institutions are unique targets. And that is a real concern, obviously. One of the recent books, Vincent Polly, an attorney based in, I think he was Michigan, he co-authored the book, The ABA Cybersecurity Handbook. And he is actually part of a technology consultant firm, No Connect. But there's real concern about, these cyber attacks. And that's something that we all have to be somewhat concerned about on a lower level if we're in business. And but no one is immune. Now, there's also a suit. There are actually 10 separate patent infringement suits have been filed against generic drug makers looking to produce lower-cost versions of a lung disease. And the suits were filed in federal court on May 15th, federal court in Trenton, and they seek to enjoin the defendants from offering to sell versions of, and I think it's Dallas Rep, D-A-L-I-R-E-S-P. And, they're trying to do that and sell the drugs in the United States before the drugs' patents expire. Well, I guess some people would say, well, wait a minute. If you can produce drugs at lower cost, they should do it. But one of the things that there has to be a balance because there's patents given to companies who often have spent millions and millions of dollars in the first place to develop the drug. So we have to be, very careful, and certainly we have to be careful about what happens in other countries
they will, you know, basically are selling and flooding the markets with some counterfeit drugs. But that's, you know, that's the latest suit, and, you know, let's see what happens, probably before the cases over the patents will have expired. Now, there's a one of the insurance law firm in New Jersey that named Carol McNulty and Call. They were subpoenaed in connection with an out-of-state coverage dispute stemming from construction litigation, and the construction litigation yielded a $55 million verdict. And this law firm is fighting a demand that it hand over its file. This is a law firm not in Hunterdon County, but they're in Basking Ridge. And they, in fact, had played a limited role in representing Crum and Foster Specialty Insurance Company in the underlying dispute. And so now the folks want their file. And so they're going to fight that and try to obviously claim lawyer-client privilege and some other things. So good news, I guess, for most people would be that bankruptcy work is changing, and apparently bankruptcy filings are declining. And so that should be, you know, good news for everybody other than the people who do bankruptcy counseling and perhaps bankruptcy attorneys, but it should mean that the economy is picking up to some extent, so people don't have to file bankruptcy. So what's approved for publications? There was a criminal case, criminal law. This was decided at the appellate division by Judge Curso, who was formerly, she was in Somerset County, an excellent jurist. And it's State versus Robertson, and Judge Curso sits in the appellate division. And the appellate division reversed an order denying the defendant's motion to suppress the handgun seized in a protective sweep of his car. So, in quotes, she uses protective sweep of his car. So, following a routine late-night traffic stop on the Garden State Parkway, the police dispatch advised the patrol officer that the defendant driver and one of his three passengers had open warrants and were known to carry weapons. And so what the five police officers who were handling it decided to, what they called, proceed tactically, and they approached with guns drawn and ordered all occupants out of the car. Now, the two men with warrants were arrested, which was proper procedure, and placed in patrol cars. However, neither of the two remaining passengers possessed a driver's license. And because there were, apparently, according to the appellate division, because there were no facts in the record to support any reasonable suspicion on the part of the officer that the unlicensed drivers were dangerous and could return to the car to obtain immediate access to a weapon, the appellate division said that the search was unreasonable. And in this case, it was interesting, it was a three-judge panel, and so one of the judges dissented. Judge Nugent dissented, concluding the totality of the circumstances justified the officer's belief that a gun was in the car and that his protective sweep was for the safety of the officers on the scene as well as the public under the community caretaking doctrine. So what does this mean? Well, it means that as of right, this case can go up to the Supreme Court, because in the appellate division, if one judge dissents, and this happens when there have three judge panels, or sometimes have two judge panels, but in cases like this, they'll add a third judge. And when they do, and one of the judges dissents, then there's a right to go up to the Supreme Court. Otherwise, there's no, and I've talked about this before, but otherwise, there's no right to go up to the Supreme Court. You can ask for certification, and the court can grant it, and does grant it for the cases they want to hear. By the way, the news a little earlier was talking about the flash flooding in Texas, and that hundreds of motorists were stranded on the roads. And frankly, if you're ever in an area, especially out west, where there's a possibility of flash flooding, it is very scary, very dangerous. And it's out of the blue, all of a sudden, you know, these torrential, it's like a river that can come across the road. But the other thing that I'd heard is that, and maybe I shouldn't repeat this, but my understanding is that when we had all of the problems with Hurricane Sandy here in New Jersey, at least some of the legislators in Texas were not did not want to fund any of the help that was needed here, and it was truly needed. But help from the federal government, maybe they weren't going so far as blocking it, but they certainly weren't being very supportive. Well, now they all have their hand out because there's going to be a need for funds going to Texas because of the terrible flooding. And, you know, so what goes around, I guess, comes around. So another case that came up, one of the problems is for lawyers is, you know, this case was interesting because it was for an attorney, maybe for no one else. But an attorney's failure to act due to his or her serious incapacity or death are not routine matters. And what happened in this case is there was a tardy tort claims notice. And so that in that case, because of the attorney's situation, it was not mere inattention. And they actually then reinstated a police misconduct case in which the plaintiff's lawyer fell seriously ill within weeks of the deadline. So that at that case, otherwise there would have been, the case would have been thrown out. So there's a case as far against Merck, one of our Merck and Company. I'm not sure how many people are still here at White House Station. But in any event, after 12 days of a jury trial, and this was in the federal courts in Newark, and it was a gender and pregnancy discrimination suit brought by a former Merck executive. And at that point, the drug maker has moved for judgment as a matter of law, claiming the plaintiff has failed to demonstrate the right to reinstatement after her pregnancy leave. And she had worked for Merck for 22 years and was a senior director of global operational excellence. And she brought claims for gender and pregnancy discrimination under the New Jersey law against discrimination and for violation of the Family and Medical Leave Act and the New Jersey Family Leave Act. So which, I'm not sure, you know, what has happened in that. But I don't know what the ruling is. I'll have to look at that and see. Is that after that 12-day trial, actually it was just in the middle of the trial, they had brought that. And the question is, that's a high burden as far as a judgment as a matter of law. And so that'll be an interesting case for lawyers at least to look at. Now, there was another case, an appeal for termination, and two tenured teachers assert that their legal defenses were not considered by the Commissioner of Education and the arbitrator hearing the case or the trial court. Now, what happened is the arbitration hearings were conducted pursuant to a recently enacted Teacher Effectiveness and Accountability for Children of New Jersey Act. The acronym is TEACHNJ, and this replaced administrative law judges with arbitrators. This act has now taken away the administrative law judges, and they've been replaced with arbitrators and immediate appellate review with trial court review. So the evaluations upon which the tenure charges were based took place prior to this new act. And so that the appellate division in this case, and Judge Koblitz, again, an excellent jurist who I appear before in at the trial level, but the matters were remanded for the commissioner to explicitly decide those legal defenses that the commissioner did not expressly delegate to the statutorily mandated arbitrators to decide. And the appellate division said the commissioner must also inform the arbitrators what legal standards to apply to teachers who have received tenure charges after the effective date of this new law. And they have, these charges are alleging inefficiency occurring prior to the effective date of the statute. So again, what is interesting to me on this is instead of having administrative law judges handle these issues, now the law has replaced them with arbitrators and an immediate appellate review. But I understand that this appellate review is from a trial court, not the appellate division. So what this does do is once again puts a bigger burden on our trial judges because they're now going to have to handle these cases in addition to everything else they handle, and we don't have enough judges as it is. So another case that was approved for, well, actually there were a few approved for publication that might be of some interest, but another criminal law case, a third-party intervention or private search doctrine does not exempt law enforcement's initial search of a defendant's home from the warrant requirement. So absent some, you know, exceptional circumstances to warrant, so that a warrant is not required, the police must get a warrant to enter a private home and conduct a search. Even if a private person has already searched the area and notified law enforcement. So this is, somewhat technical, but in fact, the fact that there's been a private search doesn't exempt what the police officers have to do. Now, there was also I talked about this, where the law division denied the motion for late filing of a Tort Claims Act notice, and in part finding that the terminal illness of his attorney, and that terminal illness required emergency surgery, did not constitute extraordinary circumstances. And of course, as I said, the appellate division reversed and remanded to the trial court, concluding that, in fact, such serious illness resulting in incapacity of the attorney could not be equated with inattentiveness or negligent conduct. And so the appellate division told the trial court that they have to hold a hearing for the purpose of determining whether the facts support the plaintiff's assertion that the late filing resulted from his attorney's severe medical condition. So, otherwise it's basically your attorney dies and something isn't done, and so you're not going to be able to proceed. Obviously, this is an issue of basic fairness. And talking about fairness, I better be fair to our sponsors and let you hear from a few of them before the end of the program.
Hi. I help students gain admission to colleges that are a great academic, social, and financial fit, where they will be successful, happy, and graduate on time with minimal debt. Email Diana at creativecollegeconsulting.com for a free consultation.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is a Forward New Jersey Coalition member.
London Bridge is falling down. Falling down, falling down, London Bridge is falling down.
In August 2007,
Are you interested in learning more about Hunterdon County? Are you interested in growing as a professional and as a leader? Then Leadership Hunterdon may be for you.
Hi, this is Chris Bianco, class of 2014 Leadership Hunterdon. Work with other local dedicated professionals to learn about the complexities and interconnectedness of Hunterdon County.
We invite you to visit one of our many upcoming sessions as we begin to recruit the class of 2016.
Learn from and connect with established business, government, and community leaders.
Leadership Hunterdon, an in-depth 9-month program offered by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce.
And honored via invitation to help Hunterdon County with its challenges and shape its future. These are just some of the virtues of being part of Leadership Hunterdon.
Contact us at 908-782-7115 or visit our website, hunterdonchamber.org, for more information today.
Well, we're back. The program It's the Law. Have just a couple more minutes. I wanted to talk to you about a medical malpractice case. And this was a medical malpractice action against the doctor, and it was in connection with the estate. And the plaintiffs and the estate of the husband of the deceased obtained an appeal. Obtained leave to appeal an interlocutory order that barred witnesses from recounting what the deceased said her doctor's staff told her in response to her complaints of chest pains following surgery. So now, what does this mean? Leave to appeal an interlocutory order. Ordinarily, the appellate division does not handle appeals until the case is over. However, in this case, if the case was over, there may have been no right to appeal depending on the decision. And so it's very rare. And there are times where I have filed a leave to appeal, and I thought that the appellate division would definitely take the case, but they did not. So, but it is important, because what was going to happen is that the order, the trial judge order, barred witnesses from recounting what the deceased said her doctor's staff told her when she complained about chest pains following surgery. Now, in this case, the appellate division reversed because the trial judge could not properly determine the trustworthiness of the statements, and that's what is the criteria. In this particular case, woman who's now deceased, so she can't testify. And the question is what she told other people, other witnesses. And so that what the trial judge must do is determine the trustworthiness of the statements. And that's required under our New Jersey rules of evidence. And it's New Jersey rule of evidence 804(b)(6), if anybody's interested. But the appellate division said the trial judge could not determine the trustworthiness of the statements without having listened to the witnesses testify at what we call a Rule 104 hearing. And also that, in addition, the appellate division found that the trial judge's concerns about the hearsay within hearsay problem were mistaken, since the inner hearsay of what defendant's staff allegedly told the deceased was in fact admissible under another rule. So there are rules of evidence, and that's one of the things that people often don't understand. We can't just put everything that we want into evidence. You can't go into court and say, you know, what a third person told you, a third party told you outside of court. In most cases, there are some exceptions to the hearsay rule, but these are this is important. And in this case, the appellate division got it right. They allowed the motion for leave to appeal that interlocutory order, and then they gave the trial judge the correct directions as to how he or she should have handled it. And now what will happen is there will be that hearing, and thereafter the judge will make a decision with respect to whether or not these witnesses can testify. And he or she will have to make that determination after the judge properly determines the trustworthiness of the statements. In other words, he's going to have to judge the credibility of the witnesses who come in on this. So that's about the end of the program, and I'm going to go to the news now, and then we'll be back with the sports guys.
USA Headline News. I'm Kelly Sloan. Officials are closely monitoring the levels of three rivers in central and north Texas and Houston after flooding this week left at least 20 people dead. Floodwaters have been receding, but officials continue to monitor the Blanco, San Jacinto, and Brazos rivers. and more rain is in the forecast today.
There'll be a little bit of a respite during the day today, but then another round of storms will likely form over parts of the West Texas area during the evening and once again progress eastward across parts of central and north Texas early Saturday.
Flooding in Dallas caused problems at a Grand Prairie apartment building overnight, according to Alidia Garcia, who spoke to KDFW.
We had our bottom resident, since we couldn't go in the front, they would have to come out the back.
The water pressure was cracking.
And it broke our downstairs neighbor's windows, so all their windows are broken.
And hundreds of Dallas motorists are still stranded on roadways. This is USA Headlines.